The old question, have you read any good books lately? Maybe a cliche and a gag, I suppose, to some people. But in certain quarters today, there's real concern about the answer that too many of our fellow Americans would have to come up with. In Chicago this past week, at the meetings of the American Library Association, the problem was certainly on the librarians' minds. And here at the University of Chicago, some of our colleagues have given a good deal of thought to America's reading habits, and they're prepared to argue that those habits are pretty alarming. To discuss this neglect of reading this morning, I'm joined by Professor Leon Karnofsky of the Graduate Library School, who's also editor of the journal The Library Quarterly, by Dean Lester Ashheim of the Graduate Library School, and by Professor Robert E. Streeter, literary scholar and dean of the college, all of them of the University of Chicago. Well, Mr. Karnofsky, you've spoken and written pretty vigorously about this so-called neglect of reading. Do you really think it's a genuine problem here in America?
Well, Mr. Rosenheim, perhaps we might change the word neglect to decline. I suppose it amounts to about the same thing, and I'm inclined to think that there has definitely been a decline of reading in this country. I would make three points. First of all, I think in the 19th century, people generally did a lot more reading than they do today. Secondly, in more recent years, I have the definite feeling that people who formerly read books and magazines either don't read them at all or they read appreciably less than they used to. And in the third place, I feel that reading in this country is certainly a whole lot less important or occupies a much less important place in relation to the population than it does in other countries.
Well, that's a pretty depressing sort of indictment, it seems to me, Mr. Karnofsky. Dean Ashheim, would you go along with it?
Well, I would certainly say this, that it is not only the scholars in the university who are concerned with this problem. We have seen how popular acceptance has taken up Mr. Flesch's book on why Johnny can't read, and this certainly reflects a very real concern on the part of parents that indeed their children do not read as well as they used to do. We know perfectly well that it is a matter of concern also that our homes just do not have space for books anymore, and while there is always a place for your TV set, bookshelves are almost never part of the original design.
So that the decline in square footage of bookshelf space is in itself a fairly significant symptom. Well, how about it from the standpoint of the teacher of literature, Dean Streeter? Do you, again, go along with this general picture?
Well, I have a purely personal impression to offer that is, in my line of work, it's sometimes desirable or at least tempting to make passing references to figures in literature. People like Mr. Micawber or Hamlet or Moby Dick or Little Lord Fauntleroy. And I think I've just about concluded that there is no single book or play, what have you, that you can assume that most 18-year-old college freshmen have read or are familiar with in any real way. Don't count on it anymore.
And that wouldn't have been true, you suppose, 40 or 50 years ago.
Well, that's the impression I have.
Uh-huh. I suppose the Bible would be one safe bet in, say, a half century ago, wouldn't it?
I think so. And the Garden of Eden is even a difficult one to be sure of at the present time.
Well, how about sort of supporting these general assertions? I mean, we've been talking about impressions and a few isolated facts and phenomena. Is there real evidence by people who've examined the thing analytically that people aren't reading in this country? What about it, Mr. Karnofsky?
Well, there are several lines of evidence that might be cited, but one which is quite impressive is the status of the bookstore. It's been estimated that we have perhaps 1,500 to 2,000 bookstores in all of the United States. But even this figure is perhaps a little too large because nearly half of them are concentrated in only four states, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and California. And in many of our very large cities, cities of 50,000 or more, they either have a very small and fairly specialized bookstore or a bookstore which handles really books as a sideline to greeting cards, stationery, and the like, or else they don't have any at all. In contrast with this, I think anyone who's gone to Europe can't help but be impressed with the fact that just about any city or every city of any size at all will have not one, but a good many rather good bookstores.
Well, of course, this is statistical evidence that sounds fairly alarming. On the other hand, isn't it true that in the United States there's more literacy than there is any place else? Aren't we very proud of this fact?
I think Mr. Karnofsky's been talking about quantity, and it's perfectly clear that quantitatively there's never been a more completely verbal civilization, perhaps, than the one in the United States today. I mean, we're thinking, for instance, of the businessman who, although he may not be a great book reader in his off hours, actually his entire working life is bound up with the writing, the reading of memoranda. It's totally verbal.
There is another problem here, though. If we talk about book reading, there is a definite low percentage of the total population who reads books. Any polls that have been made over the past 10 years come up with almost an identical figure that not more than about 25% of the population has read as much as a single book in the past month. And if we ask them, are you reading a book now, the percentage grows even lower than that.
That was certainly shown just recently in 55 when one of the Gallup polls, when he asked the question, are you currently reading a book, only 17% of the adults in this country said they were. In contrast with this, the figure was 55% in Great Britain. As a matter of fact, among the major democracies, the United States ranked pretty low. England was highest, then Norway, Canada, Australia, and Sweden, and finally came the United States. We definitely are not a book-reading nation, at least in comparison with these other countries that I've just mentioned. Well,
why is this so? I mean, I want to return to this point that we may not be reading books, but we're reading everything else. I spoke a moment ago about the businessman, but anyone who drives a car is completely at the mercy, really, of his ability to respond immediately to sometimes fairly complicated sets of symbols.
He's what somebody suggested could be called a Rhodes Scholar. Well, we're literate in that sense, I take it, but you've already provided certain evidence that we're not reading books, or at least books of the kind that you consider are worth reading. What are the reasons for this, in this flourishing, active, and highly intelligent citizenry of ours? How does it happen that we're not reading books?
Well, one of the most obvious things that occurs probably to anyone, whether he is a scholar of the field of reading or not, is that there are so many other media of communication that now occupy our time. We have the radio, we have television, we have moving pictures, we have all kinds of sources of ideas, facts, information, recreation, which are rivals to the book, which just did not exist 100 years ago.
Yes, but of course I think it's you, Mr. Karnofsky, who's pointed out that the mere existence of these inventions is not necessarily a deterrent toward reading. After all, the microphone around which we're sitting, or the television camera in front of which we may find ourselves, is merely an invention. And it seems to me these things could be used to stimulate reading, and in many cases are. Do you really think that we should join in this general outcry against television and against comic books and against movies as the things that are really at the bottom of the fact that Americans aren't reading the way they should be?
Well, this is an extremely interesting and important question. The place of the book in the whole framework of means for getting ideas around. But before we tackle that one, there's one other point that I think ought to be underscored, and that is our educational shortcomings. We found, for example, that in this Middle West, approximately one-fourth of the young men who were inducted into the Army had a reading ability which was no higher than that of a grade school level. Now, this is a fairly literate part of the country, we think, and yet there's been a block somewhere when we find that one-fourth of the people actually inducted into the Army, to say nothing of those who fail to meet even minimum requirements, are unable to read a book which is more difficult than that of a grade school graduate can master.
Gee, Mr. Streeter, that seems to undercut your cheerful assertion that a kind of minimal ability to read is almost universal. It makes the highway sound a little less safe.
Yes,
than you made them sound.
I'd certainly have to agree that whether one is free to read or free not to read, you can't make that choice until you have You've reached a point beyond that Mr. Karnofsky was just talking about.
Well, we've taxed education now, and we've also suggested that there are a good many competing influences at work fighting against the book for public attention. I wonder if there isn't perhaps something even more basic in American values, which suggests that reading is not quite as central and quite as important as it appeared to people, say, 100 years ago. Do you think there's anything in that point, Mr. Ashine?
Well, certainly it would seem to me this is really what our concern is. We are not so much interested in whether people actually sit in front of printed symbols and interpret what they mean, because if they can get the same ideas and the same mental stimulation, the same recreation and fun, for that matter, from other devices, that ought to be all right with us. I think the thing we really are concerned with is that there are particular values that can be gained from reading which are now being lost, and that we think these values are important.
Well, moreover, do you think that there is a general feeling among our fellow citizens that books simply are not of the first importance?
Well, if you talk in terms of the practical reasons why people read, the businessman that Mr. Streeter talked about, who reads reports and statistics and all the other memoranda that come over his desk, the book may not be so important for this immediate reward. He needs it for a practical reason right now, but there certainly ought to be some long-term rewards that ought to be considered also.
I think we ought to recognize, frankly, too, that there's a perfectly respectable and well-established tradition in the United States of, if not anti-intellectuality, anti-bookishness, at least. You may remember that Davy Crockett was something of a folk hero a year or two ago, and certainly he could not be accused of being a bookish type. I mean, there's been a kind of an insistence on pawkishness, practicality, hard, good sense, divorced from the kind of theoretical considerations that are associated with bookishness.
I remember a discussion at this very microphone about a year ago about Woodrow Wilson, in which it was argued very strongly that Woodrow Wilson never would be a national folk hero simply because he was so bookish. This seems to somehow alienate a man from the affection of the public at large. Do you suppose this is inevitable, and this is a very real feeling on the part of the American people that books are something that are a little offbeat?
I don't think we can make this too strong a generalization. Davy Crockett wasn't popular because he didn't read. It happens that he didn't read and he was also popular. We have another folklore which has to do with Abraham Lincoln trudging through the snow to get at a book to read by the fire against all the handicaps we can name.
Well, in spite of all of this, I have an idea that the book still occupies a pretty central place in the thinking of the American people. I think we still do have a respect for the book, even though we don't read it perhaps as much as we personally would like to, or we would like others to. But in the last analysis, we ought to raise the question, is this serious? What difference does it make whether people read books or not? It's true they can get a lot of information, they can get a lot of fun out of other media. But basically, we have this central question: does the book make a contribution which is unique, which no other medium is able to make, and actually in the competition where the book actually comes out on top? I don't think it's so much a question of identifying the book or reading with our heroes, our national heroes or folk heroes. I'm more interested in the place of the book in the reading of the everyday people, the people all around us, people like ourselves. And here there are certainly two values that we can't ignore. One is the contribution that book reading makes to general intelligent life, intelligent citizenship, and the other, which is no less important, the fun that one gets, the joyousness that one gets out of reading a book. And I think it is a matter of some regret that we've tended to lose a little of this in our scrambling for the mass media, which compete to some extent for the time of the individual.
It's certainly true that only in our time have people begun to feel concerned about what other people were reading. And I think that this is tied up with the fact that we now recognize that all of us are involved together in making important decisions about our society and our lives together. And as Mr. Karnofsky has said, one of the things that solid reading does is to extend one's ability to deal with problems beyond the narrow and the parochial into more general community interests.
I think we're in a fairly difficult and delicate position, gentlemen. I think that very frequently, those of us whose lives are fairly closely tied up with books assume a kind of evangelical zeal about the fact that other people aren't reading. Now, for example, it seems to me that if every literate American were to read, let's say, 28 books a year, you might argue that librarians and teachers of English and writers and publishers would all be socially a little happier and economically probably better off. But I think the real challenging question is, would our society be a stronger one or a healthier one if it were a more widely read society? And I suspect that perhaps librarians ought to be able to answer that in a fairly solid affirmative.
Well, certainly we believe it in a solid affirmative. There is this. Our lives are getting more and more complex every day. We are expected to make decisions in areas where we ourselves do not operate. We are expected to make important decisions that will rule not only our lives, but the lives of others. And the only way that we can possibly, in this complex situation, get to some of these other areas is vicariously, through some other medium than our own experience. The book, I think, so far, has been the very best medium for getting this kind of necessary vicarious experience in a democracy.
It sounds as though you were talking about many kinds of books, including even novels, I suppose, Mr. Aschheim.
I would certainly say that any kind of additional experience that broadens our horizons and makes us able better to cope with something outside of our own narrow sphere is all to the good in a democracy.
Yes, we make a whole lot of the fact that nobody can really answer the question, what difference does it make whether you read this book or that book, whether you do any reading at all? Well, it's pretty hard to pin down the actual effects of reading, and yet those of us who do read know that reading does have a very definite effect on our lives, how we think, how we act, how we vote. And for this very reason, I think it's a matter of real concern to find reading declining, or at least in with many people, taking a back seat to other forms of diversion.
And we've been talking about the kind of society that might be shaped by reading, and one word we haven't used is pleasant. I think it might be contribute to the pleasantness of society if people find satisfaction and happiness in good, interesting, but perhaps trivial books even.
Well, I think this is all quite true, and I think you've established a pretty good case for the importance and the joy of reading. What rather interests me, in addition to assessing these general causes for the so-called decline in reading, is the question as to whether or not books are actually accessible, whether there are some accidental circumstances that are preventing people from reading, whether there are definite steps that people like librarians can't take in order to make reading a more common habit than it is. What about that, Dean Aschheim?
Well, certainly the library profession has been much concerned about this, and their current efforts are all in the direction of making libraries or library service accessible to more and more people, into the rural areas and into other places where up to now we have not reached through such devices as extension of services and the new Library Services Act, which will promote this kind of extension of services. We are trying to get rid of this problem of inaccessibility. At least the books will be there. We are still concerned about whether people will use them.
And what about this other matter you raised, Mr. Karnofsky, about the number of bookstores? Is there any likelihood of the number of bookstores increasing and the bookstore becoming a more important center in small communities?
Frankly, Mr. Rosenheim, I see no prospect of that. I certainly have no very lively hope that anything of this sort will take place. But for this very reason, I think the point that Mr. Aschheim has just made should be underscored. The work of the library profession generally to see that library facilities, reading facilities, are more liberally extended to the rural areas and to the small towns where, unless there is a library, the accessibility of books is pretty definitely limited.
Well, of course, some of these other things, like radio and television, and above all, like inexpensive reprints, the so-called paperback books, seem to me to be a pretty good substitute for the bookstore in some instances. Would you agree with that?
Well, it seems to me that there is this one thing that we have to concern ourselves with when we talk about the substitutes. Even in a broadcast like this where we think we're talking seriously about a serious subject, there is this problem. If somebody wanted to say, that's important, I want to stop and think about it, he wouldn't be able to do it. Only with the book or printed matter can he stop to think about it.
Well, it's very nice of you to bring up this point at this particular moment because it is now time for us to stop and conceivably for our listeners to think about what we've been saying. I do want to thank Dean Lester Ashheim, Professor Robert E. Streeter, and Professor Leon Karnofsky, all of the University of Chicago, for joining us at the New World Microphone today. And now this is Edward Rosenheim at the University of Chicago returning you to Monitor in Radio Central.
Thank you, Edward Rosenheim, Jr., Associate Professor of Humanities in the College, University of Chicago, for moderating our discussion today on New World, and our thanks to your distinguished colleagues who took part in the roundtable, making it a most challenging and interesting exposition indeed. We shall look forward to next week's edition of The New World. The subject, Where Do Superhighways Lead? And taking part in the discussion, a geographer and a traffic consultant, both noted in their field. Now, if you're already looking ahead to what the Federal Highway Program means to America, you're on the Monitor Beacon. Take one.
Contributions to the Crusade for Freedom help Radio Free Europe send truth to 70 million people behind the Iron Curtain. The Reds fear truth, spend millions to drown it out with jamming and censorship. But the truth is getting through. Mail your truth dollars today to Crusade for Freedom, care of your postmaster. Coming up on Monitor, the news worldwide, national, and local. Then Monitor continues its report on fortune-telling. Now peep into the crystal ball. Say, looks like this image is going to speak.
This is Monitor, the NBC Weekend Radio Service.